Good evening. The world needs good men. The world needs good, strong men, mighty men. I know that we've lived in an era that has been so hyper-feminist that the very word masculine for some leaves a bad taste in their mouth. And that is not biblical. It is not good. It is not true. Without good men, without godly men, without strong men, societies shrivel up and they fall into decay of all kinds. But we do not just need strong men, we need men who are strong, but who are good. I think that there is a reaction now to the suppression of masculinity where there's almost a hyper jump back into things that are deemed masculine or manly. And they may be in the world's standards, but they certainly are not by God's standards. There is an online universe that perhaps you've heard of, maybe you haven't. It's known by the name the Manosphere, and it is a place, there are chat rooms, there are groups, there are those that go into these places, and usually, oftentimes, it's disillusioned young men who either didn't have a father figure as a presence in their life, or because of the public system that so pressed them down and told them, sit straight, be proper, you know, don't be a boy, and then they reacted to it, and then longing for and looking for answers, they jumped into these online places where they were mentored by those who were willing to say, look, I'll kick against the cultural narrative. I will go against what's popular, and I'll be, and you know, what arose out of it, one of the primary figures, Andrew Tate, who really does not represent what it means to be a man, but he represents some of the caricatures of what a man could be in terms of strength and maybe sometimes being rebellious against things that should be rebelled against and maybe being somebody that's willing and strong enough to go actually have a conversation with a woman. And yet he does not teach the right way to do it. He doesn't love women. In fact, I would say that he hates them. And he uses his strength not as a good man, but he uses his strength in order to take advantage of. He uses his strength in order to get what it is that he wants. And the thing that I want to say tonight is that the world needs strong men, but we need strong men who are good, who use their God-given strengths not for self-interest, but who use those things in courageous ways, and who go out and use it for the sacrifice of civilization, for the sacrifice of their families, for the sacrifice of their wives, for the sacrifice of the church. The supreme example of this, of course, is Jesus. He is the perfect man. He is the ultimate representation of what it means to be a strong man. He was willing to go all the way to death to wage the war that needed to be fought. Jesus went all the way to Calvary in order to give himself up for his bride. Jesus slayed the enemy. We need those who are willing to do that. We only need to know what the enemy actually is, and we need to know the proper mode of battle for it. Some years ago, I wrote a post about the kinds of things that I want to develop in my boys. Things like courage and resilience and strength and fortitude and sacrifice. And there was a list there. And these were things that if you looked at them, you might come, and some people did. They said, well, that's not uniquely to be for boys. That also should be for girls. Don't you want your girls to be sacrificial and courageous? And of course the answer is yes. You can't parse out any one of the virtues and say that it only belongs to one sex and it doesn't belong to the other. But the thing that I do want to say is it belongs, and the responsibility for those things first falls on the shoulders of men. Adam, it fell on him first. Adam was given this responsibility first, which is why though Eve sinned first, God went first to Adam. It falls first on the shoulders of men. I would say that any properly developed person, male or female, should develop a sense of courage and resilience and sacrifice within themselves. But men, if somebody breaks into your home in the middle of the night, who in your home is going to meet the enemy at the threshold? Who's doing it? Won't it be the men? Shouldn't it be the men? And the thing that I wrote back to this person is not that there's a difference necessarily in the virtues, but the one that leads in those virtues should be the man. It should fall on his shoulders first. He should be the one to fight first. She should not have to. And there's something so different in the nature of men and women, such that men desire and have this innate boiling up in themselves to want to be that sacrificer. It would be my duty to do it, to answer the threat. No chance is she going to do that. That is in me. That should be in a man to want to meet the threat. And most women have no problem with that. In fact, when you actually get into their psyche and get to know them, they want that. They prefer that. That's the difference between men and women. Not that women don't have courage, but that they're glad in a moment where courage is needed to let the man be the one to do it. If I was gone on a trip and only Miranda was home, that responsibility would fall to her, but it falls first to me. And I want to give some principles from the book of Chronicles, chapter 12. I'm just going to run through these. I'm not going to spend any length of time on them, but I want to encourage you with this thought. David's mighty men are mentioned. And by the way, the word mighty in Hebrew, do you know what it means? Manly. That is one of the first definitions for what the word mighty means. Manly. It has to do with what is expected of and required of men. This is a call for men. Men should desire these things. And the Holy Scriptures have given us these examples of what it means to be masculine or manly, and they've given it so that we could then take them and draw out the principles that are there. All of these men who came to the aid of David when he was established as the king over Israel, these men are mentioned by name. Small stories are given to multiple of them to say, look what this guy did, look what this guy did. And they mention his name. And those that came to the aid of David who were in this way, it mentions their name. I think that fathers should be reading these stories to their sons. I think we should, there's something in a boy to want to hear these stories, to see these men that were this strong, to see these men that had this kind of courage, this kind of resilience, this kind of physical fitness even, to desire to go into the battlefield and to fight against the enemy. I think that we should be drawing these stories out. We should be capitalizing on them. We should be the ones that are setting the pace, setting the standard, and giving the example to the disillusioned young men of what it does mean to be a man. There is a difference between men and women. We are called to these things. Society has suppressed it. And we do not care what society says. God has made us in this way, and we must rise up to what God has called for us to do. Let me read to you a couple of these accounts. 1 Chronicles chapter 11, in verse 11, it says, this is an account of David's mighty men. Joshabim, a Hachmonite, was chief of the three. He wielded his spear against 300 whom he killed at one time. Why does it say that? Why is that recorded for us? Why does it give his name? Why does it say this guy with one spear killed 300? I don't know. Men, that does something inside of you to hear that, doesn't it? Look at verse 20. Now Abishai, the brother of Joab, was chief of the 30, and he wielded his spear against 300 men and killed them and won a name beside the three. Verse 23. We're going to come back to Benaiah, something preceding this in just a moment, but verse 23, he struck down an Egyptian, a man of great stature, 5 cubits tall, which is 90 inches. The Egyptian had in his hand a spear like a weaver's beam, but Benaiah went down to him with a staff and snatched the spear out of the Egyptian's hand and killed him with his own spear. This giant man, Benaiah was smaller than he. He had a big weapon. Benaiah had a staff. He used it to get the spear from his hand, and then he killed him with his own spear. Why does it tell this? What are we to take from that? It starts out by saying these are David's mighty men. These were the manly men that surrounded David, and it speaks to these. Chapter 12 and verse 8. From the Gadites, there went over to David at the stronghold in the wilderness mighty and experienced warriors, expert with shield and spear, whose faces were like the faces of lions, and who were swift as gazelles upon the mountains. Doesn't that, young men, doesn't that do something in you to hear that? Faces like those of lions. There was a fierceness. There was a toughness, a ruggedness there. They were extremely strong, but they could run across the mountains. They were swift. They were mobile. They were fit. Doesn't that do something? Doesn't that swell something up in you to say, I want to be like that? I mean, there's a reason why you ask little boys, what do you want to be when you get big? I want to be a soldier. I mean, when I was a boy, that's all I wanted to be. I dressed in camouflage every day for years. Went around the house with my little guns, and that's what I wanted to be. I mean, there's something in there that is innate. These stories are here to tell us about those that have this kind of courage. And I'll say this, the world would say that it's masculine and manly to fight for any reason at all. No, it's not. It's masculine and manly to fight for what is right, to fight against the proper enemy. Not just to fight, not just to be a brawler, but to be somebody who has courage and knows the proper time to do that. And I think that we will see that here in just a moment. But these stories are here, and I think that these stories speak to the need for courage, the need for resilience, the need for fortitude, the need for strength, the need for fitness, the need for mental prowess. Look, we're not Gnostics. God made us with physical bodies. Don't you think that God wants us to be able to do things with these physical bodies? That's how He made us. He could have made us just magical floating spirits with eyeballs, who never had any physical issues at all, but God made us in physical bodies to be able to do physical things. Think about the need, perhaps, to carry the message of Jesus Christ across mountains, across places where there are enemies. Think about the need of fitness to be able to cross a river or to climb a mountain or to do any one of these things that are being called upon to do. These examples, like those with faces like lions who were swift as gazelles across the mountains, are speaking to something that I think we need. We should capitalize on it. Look at chapter 11 and verse 14. Chapter 11 and verse 14, it says, speaking of Eliezer, starting verse 13, he was with David at Pastamim when the Philistines were gathered there for battle. There was a plot of ground full of barley, and the men fled from the Philistines. But he took his stand in the midst of the plot and defended it and killed the Philistines, and the Lord saved them by a great victory. The thing that I want you to see there is that here was a person of the kind of fortitude and toughness. There's a mental mindset to say, I'm not leaving this place. It needs to be defended. But it says that he stood there, he defended it, and who does it say gave the victory? The Lord did. There are many who would be willing to fight, but they would think that the strength was in themselves alone. And they may be able to fight against enemies of the world, but they will not last long. But there are those like David who could go out into the battlefield and he could say to Goliath, while all the rest of Israel was shaking in their boots, "You've defied the armies of the living God, and this day he will give you into my hand." Who will do it? David said, God will do it. God will give you into my hands. This is teaching us an important lesson. The victory has to be from the Lord, meaning whatever that fight is that needs to be fought needs to be the fight that God would have us fight. Not just the need for fighting. It's not manly to just be angry and want to fight. That's not what it is. It's knowing the time and place and having the wisdom to know what to do when that time comes. I love this story between verses 15 through 19. It says this is chapter 11, 1 Chronicles 11, 15. Three of the 30 chief men went down to the rock to David at the cave of Adullam when the army of Philistines was encamped in the valley of Rephaim. So these men are camping out. They've been fighting. David was then in the stronghold, and the garrison of the Philistines was then at Bethlehem. And David said longingly, so here's the king. The king said longingly, "Oh, that someone would give me water to drink from the well of Bethlehem that is by the gate. But that gate is occupied by enemies." And it says in verse 18, "Then the three mighty men broke through the camp of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate and took it and brought it to David." What do we learn from that? Well, there's something mighty, there's something manly, there's something masculine about being willing to sacrifice your own safety for the good of others, for the well-being of others, especially for one that you deem to be your leader. You may not be in that high position, but the willingness to go to such lengths for the one that is in that position, there's something courageous and mighty about that. But there's also something mighty and masculine about the response of David to it. They broke through the camp to bring water to David, and notice what David the king did. There are many kings in this world. There are many in positions of high authority who use that position to say, "You go do for me whatever I ask of you. You risk body and life for me, and I will reap the benefits of this." That is not what David did. David was a truly mighty man himself, because it says this, that when they brought the water back to him, it said in verse 18, halfway through, "But David wouldn't drink it. He poured it out to the Lord." He was thirsting, and perhaps he said just in passing, because of the labors that they'd been facing as men out on the battlefield, David said perhaps in passing, "Man, I wish somebody would get me a drink from those waters." And when they did it, David thought, "I'm not drinking this." He poured it out before the Lord as a sacrifice and said, "Far be it from me, before my God, that I should do this. Shall I drink the lifeblood of these men? For at the risk of their lives they brought it." Therefore he would not drink it. These things did the three mighty men. There's a profoundly important lesson here about it, what it means to be masculine if you're in the position of leadership or in the position of subordination. The one who's subordinate is willing to sacrifice for the one that's in the leadership position. The one in the leadership position isn't using that to his own advantage. He's not using it to abuse those that are underneath his rule and his authority. He's not going to use them for his own personal gain. In fact, you look at David and the life that he led and the way that he dealt with his troops, he was always after what was best for them and ultimately what was best for Israel and ultimately what was best for the glory of God. This is where David's mind was. We need this. The world needs this. We are hungry for it. And I hope that we can develop this here among our young men and our old alike. Look at verse 22. This is one of my favorite stories in the entire Bible. 11 and verse 22. "Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was a valiant man of Kabzeel, a doer of great deeds. He struck down two heroes of Moab, So these were very valiant men that he fought against. And you always get this perspective that they are, perhaps the one that is fighting isn't as physically up to the standard of the one he's fighting against. But there is a difference in mindset. There's a difference in heart. There's something deep on the inside of them. They know they're fighting for something of import. And that goes a lot further than just being the big dog on the block. He struck down two heroes of Moab, and then listen to this. He also went down and struck down a lion in a pit on a day when snow had fallen. Why did God record that for us? This guy killed these two valiant men, and then it says, oh, and also, he went down into a pit, and he just killed a lion, and it was snowing outside when he did it. Why does it give that? I mean, this is teaching something about being tough. We need to be willing to do that. I think we should train for being ready for whatever may come. There's something about that. Don't be a soft man. Be a hard man. Be someone that is tough. Use what God has given you. Whatever you have, use it and be tough. Endure suffering. Be a protector. Be strong. And then let me finish with this verse. Chapter 12 and verse 32, which I think rounds it out, because you have all these principles. You have right now a time where the world is saying that being a man is bad, and so then there's a reaction to it saying, no, it's not bad, I'll rise up and I'm going to smack you down for saying that. And I would say, no, don't act that way. That's not the way to respond to it. You remember when God told Eve and Adam, God said, your desire will be for your husband. I think the idea there is more your desire will be against your husband. There would be fighting between you, and he will rule over you. And I don't think that that's a picture of goodness. I think that's a picture of a man rising up in response to the woman trying to take his role, and he reacts too harshly. It says in a very parallel passage later in Genesis that Cain, it said that sin is crouching at your door and its desire is for you, but you must rule over it. The idea there is there's this crouching tiger trying to get you. You must defeat it. And I think God, when he was giving a curse upon man and woman, was saying that there would come a time, and there certainly has been a time, it has come in cycles, where women have tried to take the position that God rightly gave to men, and then men have not responded as they should, but they've been way too harsh in response. I think that's where we're at right now. I think that's where the society is right now. And so we need good men. We need men of courage and strength and resilience and fortitude and ultimately sacrifice. But you know what we need? We need men who are able to gather up all of these principles and look out into the world and be able to act with wisdom toward the setting in which we find ourselves. Chapter 12 and verse 32. I did a lesson on this just recently, but I want to read it. These are some of the mighty men of Issachar. Chapter 12 and verse 32. Men who had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do. Look, there's something masculine about knowing what is happening in the world and paying attention to it. The opposite would be somebody who's just stuck down in technology world, stuck down in video game world, stuck down in television world, stuck down in game world where all it is games and fun and playtime. I don't think that's good. I think we should have those who read and are well-equipped and know what's happening in the world and go to God and seek out wisdom from above. Those who prepare their bodies for the service of Christ, whatever it may demand of them, who prepare their minds to be sharp, knowing what's happening in the world, asking God for wisdom so that he can supply us with what's needed for the time. I think that this is what God is calling us to do. And ultimately, as we think about what it means to be masculine or mighty or manly in the sense of the true nature God gave, it's going to be, I'm going to use all of these strengths, all of my gifts and abilities, everything I have, I'm going to use it for the good of others. First, for the good of my wife. Second, for the good of my kids. Third, for the good of my church. Fourth, for the good of my community. Fifth, for the good of the world. You use those things, and there's a profound sense of duty and purpose in one who takes what they were given and uses it for the good of someone else. We learn this from the chief man, Jesus. Jesus left heaven and all of its splendors, and he came down here in bodily form. And he went and he waged a war against the dragon that had control over his own bride. And he slayed that dragon. And we praise God that he did. And he left an example and a pattern. We're just microcosms of it. My challenge to you is to embrace what God has given, what he has designed, and that we would lead the charge on what that actually looks like. I think we should be that voice of reason. I don't think that the manosphere should be the ones to decide it. God has given an example right here. So let's take it and set an example for the world. If you have any need at all, please let it be known while we stand and while we sing.